Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby, your weekly dose of health, wealth, and everything else.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby. I'm your host, Lisa Mosby. And you know what? Today, we're talking about money. How about a date with money? Have you ever thought about getting into relationship with your money? Well, today's guest is going to talk about why this is so important. You know, during her 20 plus years of experience in finance and business, Chris has realized that money isn't just logic and math. There's also an emotional side to money as well. To be successful, happy, and fulfilled, one must embody the three pillars: your mindset, your energy, and your plan. There was a time in her life when she did not realize how important understanding the first two pillars is. Chris shifted her thinking and realized how important it is to have a positive money mindset and positive energy around money. So Chris is on a mission to change how the world sees money. By helping one family at a time, she will navigate this journey of continual learning, growing, and creating a more abundant lifestyle. She'll come alongside you to do all of those things. So please welcome my friend, money coach, Chris Rodriguez. Chris, thanks for being here with me.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with you today.
Yeah. And you go by money coach. I didn't say that so much in the introduction, but she's getting known as money coach Chris, which I love that you have this, this phrase that's coined you, and it totally describes you and your energy and your vibrancy around helping and coaching people through this process. So I want to kick this off with, how did you get to where you are now? Like, give us a little bit of background. Like, how did you get to this place of being known as money coach?
So that's actually a great question. So it started with money coach Chris started because last year I was actually going or started the process of going through another divorce. It would have been my second divorce. And I was struggling with my identity. I'm like, who am I? Because if you get divorced and you're like, oh, what's my last name going to be? Right. And so since it was my second marriage, would have been my second divorce. I was struggling with, who am I? And that's where I coined money coach Chris, because then I'm like, then my last name doesn't matter. And my husband and I reconciled and we were back together. And so everything is beautiful. So I love that. But that journey, sitting in that space of not knowing like who I am and where am I going, really helped me grow into who I am now. So I'm very thankful for going through all of that.
We actually share in common. She shared that story with me before because I struggle with that. I kept my married name. I didn't switch back to my maiden name because we were so young when we got married that I didn't, my entire business and professional life was Mosby. And so there's that, we struggle with that. We go through this drama and trauma enough with the divorce, but then it's like your identity is also tied to that. So money coach Chris has identified herself and her passion, her mission for what she does and how she serves people. And I want to jump into the emotional side of money, because there is so many marriages fail because of money. So many relationships struggle because they can't talk about money and they came from two different worlds and they don't have this common bond of being able to talk about it. So what do you find is the biggest emotional roadblock? Okay, maybe no pressure, not the biggest. What is an emotional roadblock that kind of stands out when you're interviewing and having conversations with people? You know, there's probably some sort of a repetitive pattern that is there around the emotional side of money. Let's talk about that.
So what I've discovered with working with my clients is, so I take clients on a series of questions. And what I found is that one of my questions is, what is your first memory of money? And then how that associates with what they fear about money. And so a lot of times, like how we grow up, how we see our parents or our family dealing with money and finances kind of like embeds this emotional block for us. So we either feel like we can't do something because, oh, that's not our family, or I see couples, like one couple will think one way, and then the, or one person in the couple will think one way, and then the other will think something completely different. So one might be a little bit more in a scarcity mindset, and the other one might be more abundant. And then they struggle because they're like, no, my way's best. No, my way's best. So that, like, not understanding where they each are coming from is also another emotional roadblock, because then they can't seem to get on the same page, and it causes a lot of struggle and stress around finances.
When you're talking about that, a couple of things popped into my head is rob Peter to pay Paul. I remember hearing that, like, oh, we got to take it from this credit card to pay this credit card. You know, there's this rob Peter to pay Paul. And oh yeah, the love of money is evil. Like there's these catchphrases that at least people of my generation are probably familiar with. You've probably heard those. And so those have energy. When we have that mindset, not only is it a belief like in ourselves, and it affects how maybe we hold onto the purse strings too tight, or we won't invest in ourselves or invest in our education, to the energy around that. We talked about mindset and energy in your introduction. How do those words put energy into the beliefs, the limiting beliefs that we experience? How does that, you know, the energy of that affect our beliefs?
Yeah. So think about like what you were just saying, like either like, oh, you know, money is evil. So then you're thinking that, and then your energy behind that is, well, I can't have enough money, or I can't have more money, because then I'll become an evil person. Yeah. Well, I like to help people shift that in, you know, to me, my mindset about that is, money is neither good or bad. Money is just a tool and resource, right? And so however you are as a person, money may amplify that. So if you're inherently a good person, having more money might help you to be more generous or a more giving person. But if you're inherently maybe not a great person, then that might make you feel like, oh, now I have money, I have control over you. So I really think it's not the money that does that for us. I think it's the mindset that we have, and then understanding our mindset gives off the energy, right? So then if we know our mindset, our belief around money, and then our energy, which is our deeper attachments to money, then the energy of abundance and or holding on being scarcity really comes into play. And so if you can understand where you're in alignment and say, oh, you know, money isn't good or bad, it's just this object, it's a tool and resource that we can use at our fingertips, then it allows the energy to be flowing, right? And if we can understand and get past that block, so many things can be possible.
I see that so often in myself. I mean, you're in that field where you're seeing it in these conversations that you're having, but we do, when we start doing deeper work on yourself to try to bring up those things that block you or that have stopped you from achieving the goals that you want to achieve or saving the money that you want to save, there's so much of it that comes from what we've heard, what we've observed, the environment that we grew up in, that, you know, I see how it does affect that. So is there hope for us to actually change it? And what does that process start to look like?
Yes, there's definitely hope. And it doesn't matter how young or old you are. I tell people all the time, like, we can't do anything about the past. So we can't go in the past and change it. What we can do now is understand where we're at today, understand what we believe in, and how our energy is about money, right? And then once we come into a neutral space. So we're not being overly positive and we're not being negative about it. We're just, hey, here's the facts. This is where we're at now. This is how I believe money to be. Here's where my situation is. Now we can understand how then you can get past and go into the future, right? But I can't give you a roadmap to where you want to go if I don't know where you are right now, emotionally, energetically, and then actual numbers, right? Because when it comes down to finance, we need to know, like, what are your expenses? How much money do you make? How much money do you actually spend? And then what are your goals? So then we can help create a roadmap for you on getting past to the next level, understanding how you align with money. Then there's a way that we can move forward with that.
so much emotion tied to money, and we have to take the emotion out of it. I love that you always say that. I've heard you say it so many different times when I've listened to you speak, and that is, you got to take the emotion out of it. Let's get down to the facts, and these are the facts. Those stories, those cliches, those I don't know what you call them, those phrases that we use are not facts. They're stories that we've told ourselves that have developed our belief system. And we need a new belief system. We need to tell ourselves new stories. And part of that comes with the plan. I know that you dive into those different pieces of the mindset and the emotions behind it, the stories they've told themselves. How do we step into the plan? Like, I know you deal with all that stuff first, and then you get into the plan. Or is the plan, that's the first piece of the plan, and then we get into the actual numbers? Tell us more, kind of give us more of a feel, like what can somebody expect to walk through when they're reestablishing a healthy relationship with money?
Yeah. So I want to say first, it's difficult. I've actually had clients tell me, like, at the end, not in the beginning, but they're like, oh my gosh, I thought this was just dragging on because you just keep asking me question over question. And I just like, what does that have to do with money? And once we get past that, because that is the first step of it, the first half of my whole program is understanding your mindset and your relationship with money. But once we understand that, then I help clients to actually go through and create rules and boundaries with their money. So if you, anything that you know about money, and I know you know a lot of different people in the financial industry, there's 27 different ways to do something, right? And they're good. They have all good things. And then there's some cons with everything. There's always pros and cons. And I always say, what are you willing to give up to get something? Like, what's that risk tolerance? It's not just your risk in the stock market, but anytime you get something really good, you're giving up something. So what are you willing to give up in order to get, right? And the same thing with your mindset around money. Once you understand how you see money, how you value money, what your energy is around money, then we can create a plan based on your alignment. So then now the rules and boundaries that you're creating for money is not me telling you what to do. It's you discovering for yourself, oh, that will work for me because I believe this way about money. So then now you're creating consistent rules and boundaries. So you're creating consistently disciplined habits for yourself that you're going to stick to, right? And going back to neutral, I help my couples also be able to have healthy communication around money. So this is where the dating your money comes into play. So not like having a financial meeting, like, hey, that's boring. Like, oh, I have to talk about finances with my spouse. Like, who wants to do that? Nobody. It's not fun. Not even my husband. He hates it. But now we're dating our money. So we're setting aside a date night, right? And we're going over, I have an agenda. So then people that are like, I don't even know what to talk about, I have it created for you. I have a whole process. Talk about these things. And so it's outlined for you. It's easy. And then you're keeping to your front of your mind, like, what are your goals for the year? What are you focusing on? And what are your rules and boundaries for money? And then guess what? When you're in your date night with your money and you guys have to make a decision, you guys aren't fighting with each other. You're saying, oh, we need to make a decision here. Oh, what are our rules say? Our rules say this. Oh, here's what we do then, right? But if you're not creating those rules and boundaries, then it's, you know, the person that's more abundant struggling with the person that might be more in a scarcity mindset, and you're not agreeing, and then you can't go forward. But if you can agree from a neutral place and then create this information for you, then it's all set. You don't have to struggle or fight about it.
Do each person in the couple, they each have their own, like they do it themselves, and then they come together and compare notes and try to create a master list. Is that how you do it?
So we work together. So every couple is going to be different, right? So, yeah. But they're doing it together, and they might not agree on something, and that's okay. Because then what you're going to do is, this person is going to agree to this set of rules, and this person's going to agree to this set of rules. The challenge might be then when you're coming together for a family rule, right? Or a whole couple rule, how do we navigate that? And then that's where I come in to kind of help with that situation. But for the most part, a lot of couples will have like joint money and then separate money. And that's one thing, you know, being married for the second time. That is one thing that I highly recommend, is that couples have joint money to pay the bills and stuff, but you also get some spending money that you each get to not have to report back to. So you can call it your monthly spending allowance or your walking around money or whatever. Just, this is the amount of money I can do whatever I want for the month without the other person's approval. Right. And that also helps alleviate stress, because then you don't have to ask if, hey, can I go out and, you know, get this lunch with my friend, or, you know, get my nails done or do whatever, because it's already tied to all of your roles.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's because, you know, we don't have to discuss every single cent and where it goes, because that creates its own form of stress. Oh, you spend more than I spend. Well, wait a minute, but I'm taking care of the house and the groceries and you know, filling up the car every week. And, or I'm over here and I pay the landscaper and I pay the, and it's like, yeah, it looks like I'm writing more checks or I'm charging more things, but they're for the house. Those are joint things. So being able to create these buckets completely makes sense when we take the stress out of it. This is our stuff together. And what you do over here and what you do over here with your fun money, I don't need to know about it. I mean, you'll see it if I'm wearing a new dress or I got a new hairstyle or, you know, got my nails done. You know, that can come out of my fun money. I love that idea. And we don't teach this. We do not teach this in school. Like, how are we supposed to come together as adults in relationship and understand another person who was raised in a different environment? Maybe their mom and dad had separate money. My mom and dad never had separate money. It was all one account. And so it was it's very different when you're with somebody to get on the same page. And I think you're going to be you're making changes to the world with the course that you've been talking about and bringing that into the schools. Tell us how you do this, and you start with the young people.
So I'm actually working right now. So my sister is a fifth grade teacher, and so she created a curriculum for her class, and the kids all get a job, a career, and then they get paid a salary, and then they have to pay certain bills. So I helped her create a digital way that they can keep track of their money and pay their monthly bills, and they get to have some money for fun. And then I've been coming in once a quarter and then talking to the students. So these are fifth graders. So we started out with, what even is money? Where did it come from? And this was so fun for me because the questions were amazing. It was like, well, when did it get discovered? Who created money? And we found that money came into formation in the 14th century as like these little metal coins, right? And I talk about too a lot of times, like everything is made up, right? And there are no rules. So I say this to the kids. I'm like, well, this came from here. It was made up in the 1400s. And before that, we traded. So we're always talking about like how money came to be so that they can see it. And we talk about, like, I had different denominations, including credit cards and including like all the ways that we can spend money. And then we get into, right now, we're starting to talk about creating rules for money. So even as fifth graders, because they might get money through birthdays or Christmases, or maybe they get an allowance, maybe they don't, maybe they help a neighbor and they get money, or, you know, whatever that comes. But we already started talking about any money that they get, how much are they going to save? How much are they going to spend? And then also, how much are they going to give? So I talk about that a lot with the kids, and I'm loving being able to speak to them. And after this year, my sister and I working together will create something that we can bring to schools. There is a lot of financial education out there for kids, a lot of like the how-tos, but I'm starting again with the relationship of money and understanding that money has no power over us. Right? Money is just a tool and resource. And how can we use this money to help our opportunities in life instead of like, oh, I need to do this and this and this? We don't need to do anything. We get to do everything.
Such a disconnect. I've noticed that even with the youth in my life, they use Cash App or Venmo or other apps, and they never actually touch money. They never actually, you know, like when I was showing them dimes, nickels, and quarters, they didn't know what they were, which I was shocked, because I started babysitting at such a young age. And I remember getting 50 cent pieces or silver dollars were a big deal. In fact, I saved some of them, and I have a pile of them in my jewelry box, because we just don't see that very much anymore. And so the youth of today, everything is electronic. So it's just a transaction. And you know, we're disconnected from money, but which is good in that we don't have an emotional tie to it and how much money I have in my pocket. And it's bad because we don't really value it. Like we don't, you know, or we value the youth today, maybe value it differently. We'll just pay with Cash App, but there's no money left in there. How do you pay with Cash App? You know, how are you seeing that show up with this, the younger generation right now?
Yeah, they definitely have a disconnect with the emotional side of money. But then there's also with these young kids too, so much influence of being a celebrity or being a big sports person or being a YouTube famous person, which is great. And having different ideas about like, you don't have to make a lot of money to have a good life. So also helping kids understand that, yes, you can do anything that you want to do. And yes, if you want to have millions of dollars, great, go create that. But the value of money and understanding that you don't have to have millions of dollars in order to be happy, right? So I'm trying to teach everyone. This is like my mission is to change how the world sees money, because I don't want to, I want to create a world that money doesn't equal power, but money equals opportunities, right? And the way that we can create our opportunities and create a life that we want to live based off of the resources that we currently have. And if we need more resources, how can we create more resources? So I'm seeing that in the younger kids, how that is a huge disconnect. So that's why I'm excited to be able to talk to kids that young and coming up with some other things too, Lisa, to help even younger kids through storytelling. So that will be coming out later this year.
There's a book. What she's saying, guys, is there's a book. You know, the generational differences from, you know, when we were kids and had money and how we got paid in cash to the electronic transactions. How do parents open up and have this conversation? I mean, they can rely on you and the tools that you're creating. But right now, today, is there some way for parents to maybe have some conversations with our youth to like bring this gap closer together between how they were raised and what the kids are experiencing? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, just talk to your kids. Like a lot of times, and
well, that's, you know, easy.
Right? So I want to share this with you. And this is how this all started. So I'm crediting my son. When he was 16, he started asking me more questions. Now, he was with me all the time because he was just always with me. So he would hear me talking to clients about the stock market or investing or things like that. And he would ask a lot of questions. And at a very early age, he started saving 30% of his allowance. Now he got $10 a week. And so he'd save $3 a week. And then we'd put that into ETFs and things like that. But he would ask me a lot of questions. And one day when he was 16, he asked me how much money I made. And I said, well, I'm not going to tell you that. Like, why would you ask me that question? And he's like, well, why? Why won't you tell me? And I said, well, I don't know, because that's what I was taught. I was taught that you don't say that. You don't talk about how much money you make, especially in a blended family, right? You don't tell people what you have. And then he said to me this most important thing, and this is where everything changed for me. He said to me, well, Mom, like, if I don't know all the facts, how am I supposed to know exactly what to do? And I was like, okay, I got you. So I'm like, you know what? Okay, well, this is how much money I make. And keep in mind, I own a business. So this is the revenue that I bring in. And then my expenses are this much. So since that moment, he's going to be turning 20 this month. So over the last, you know, several years, we've been talking about that. And then actually like opening up. So my biggest thing to parents for young kids is to actually talk about money. Now I understand, and it's a balancing act, but I'm not saying that you have to tell your kids exactly how much you make or exactly how much money that you have, but be open to saying, hey, this is the range that we're at, and this is how much our household costs and expenses, but being very open about that, and also teaching the kids that money, like personal money, like you don't want to sit there and go tell all your friends all the money that you have, right? But it's okay to talk about like, hey, this is what I've experienced in my life and this is how much it costs. And I was also very mindful when my kids were younger because they would ask for like, hey, can we go do this? Can we go do that? And then I would say, no, we can't do that because I made some poor decisions earlier in my life. And so now I have to pay for those, right? So I'd be careful to say things like that because our kids are going to learn from us. So share, have parents share the things that they messed up in. Have parents share successes that they've had. And it's okay for parents to say, hey, we're starting this path right now. We didn't know enough then, and now we're learning. So in my course that I'm doing, I'm teaching that. Because ideally, I want to really impact our kids because then they can grow up and really be the change that we want to see. And I know my mission will take decades to actually come to fruition. But even in my book series that I'm going to be have coming out the end of this year, I include a workbook for parents to help parents really understand how to talk about money with their kids. Because what I've also realized, especially working with my sister's fifth grade students, is that the kids only know from what their parents know. And so I want the parents to be included in learning about money with their kids. And because we're in a different world, money's different today than it was when we were kids too. Like you just said.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and one of the things that you had touched on earlier is you said something about abundant versus scarcity mindset, you know, abundant versus scarcity mindset. And I think having these conversations with kids, sometimes we go, oh no, honey, we can't afford it. And that's very much a scarcity. I remember hearing that all the time. And you don't think there's any harm being done by that because you just, well, you know, we don't have the money right now. It's not a big deal. You know, we'll go to the beach next year or we'll go to the beach, you know, in a couple of months or, you know what, maybe you'll get those shoes at Christmas or for your birthday rather than right now. But we flippantly say, we can't afford that. And the kids start to hear that and they start to develop this scarcity mindset. How do we avoid that and make sure not to be bragful or boastful about how much money we have and telling them a number and all of those things where they think they're rich and there's an unlimited source and we just go pick it from the money tree in the backyard. But how do we create a balance between this abundant and scarcity mindset with kids today?
Yeah. So I love when parents talk about their goals as a family, including their kids in there. So let's say that the family has a goal or it's part of their rules and boundaries that they're going to go on a large vacation every other year or once every 5 years or whatever that is, right? But having goals, and I would love if they could be listed somewhere like in the kitchen or something that everybody can see. Because then when it comes time to saying, oh, a kid wants these shoes or they want whatever, then the parent can just say, oh, okay, if we got that right now, that means that this other goal that we're working for is going to be delayed. So which do you choose? Like allowing the kids to see like that instead of getting things instantly, like why can't I think of that word? Delayed gratification, right?
So instant gratification.
Yeah. So, and that's a lot in our kids today is like everything is instantaneous, right? We can get everything, even as adults. I'm like, oh, I don't want to go to the store for that. Oh, I can have it here tonight at 8 if I go on Amazon Prime. You know what I mean? But delaying those. So having parents understand what their goals are, but talking to the kids about that, getting on the same page. What are our goals as a family? And then when it comes time to we can't afford something, you can simply say, hey, you know, if we get that right now, then that's going to further delay this. Or, you know, when we went over our family planning or spending plan, we didn't allocate for that this time. If that's something that you'd like, we need to refigure how our spending plan looks. I am very careful also about using words like, I don't like the word budget. I know a lot of people like budget, like, hey, let's create a budget, but I like the word spending plan because a budget even can be limiting. Like, oh, I can only spend this much money or I can only save this much money. But what if you get more money? Then what does that look like? So I like creating spending plans over budgeting. And I always try to use my words very carefully. And sometimes I'll slip into that scarcity mode too. And then I'll catch myself. I'm like, oh no, I didn't mean to say that. And another, this is a trick for parents too. Like, let's say, you know, you want to go to the beach or vacation, or let's say your kids want to go to Disney. And Disney these days, I mean, just for a family of four for a weekend, I think is at least $5,000. So instead of saying, you know, we can't afford that, say, you know, I know that we really want to go to Disney. And right now, our budget for our vacation is this, or our plan for our vacation is this. So maybe there's something else that we can do. But if you say, but like, if you say, I want to go to Disney, but I don't have the money, instead say, I want to go to Disney and I have this much money. So what else can you do? Instead of going to Disney, that's something that's very cool, or really understanding, okay, if we do want to go to Disney, let's plan for that. Let's add that to our spending plan so that, you know, in a year or 2 years we can go.
Actually, I know, I had a niece who did this. She created a chart and it's like, okay, this is how much we have set aside. And oh, this week we added this much dollars to the account. And this, you know, like, oh, I asked grandma and grandpa for Disney dollars, so I'll have my spending taken care of when we get there, you know, and then the kids get to participate. It's like, here's how much you have for your spending. And here's how much you have for your spending. And here's how much closer we are to getting our passes to go to Disney. And, you know, it can be a chart on the refrigerator and everybody can be involved in that. And, you know, the reward, the payoff for doing that is just like the kids are invested in it. They get the value of it. And I think it just makes it that much more special when you can do it together as a team and it's not just mom and dad paying for it and, you know, the kids get any and everything they want. How is that helping to develop them as human beings? Where does the personal growth come in for causing them to be responsible and planning and, you know, setting goals and achieving them? There's so many emotional, mental health things that are part of this process of understanding and getting to know money and how we're using our money. You know, are there some small steps that, you know, that was one idea, but are there like one or two or three small steps that you really implement with parents who have children to get them started with this mindset? Is there something that's kind of, you know, an organized plan of 1, 2, 3?
So when you're starting to teach the children, the first thing is to talk about money, have them be part of your, money date night, if you will. And include them, not maybe not in everything, but in some of the things. And just like you were mentioning, like, hey, you're going to have, we have this goal. We want to go to Disney or whatever vacation you want to go to. The biggest things with kids, the thing I see that kids want the most is either go and hang out with their friends or Chipotle, Chick-fil-A, like all the food. They don't want you to, right? So they always want to go out with their friends or get the Starbucks or get whatever it is. So if you can say, hey, you know, if we spent this much money, if we did go out and we did this thing, then, you know, that's going to come away from our goal, our budget over here. But really getting the kids, understanding what money looks like, depending on how old the kids are. The other thing I do is, if the parents are funding, let's say that they have to give the kids lunch money or they're in an activity and they have to pay for that and they have to pay for the equipment that goes in that activity, things that the kids have to pay monthly, one thing that a parent can do is pay an allowance to the kid. Now, there's people say, oh, but, you know, I don't want to give my kids an allowance because they should just be doing everything. And I'm not saying to give them an allowance for being part of the family, but just give them an allowance that's going to allow them to pay for all the things that you're already paying for them. And what this does is the kid's going to get the allowance. Now, this is more ideal depending on the maturity of your kid, somewhere between age 12 and up, right? But it can even be done a little bit younger for like things that, like, if the parents is already spending $20 a week or a month on, like, you know, going to Walmart and picking up a Hot Wheel or picking up a Barbie or whatever, giving a kid an allowance of what you already spend so that they are responsible for paying for these things, right? And then that way they understand, because if it's coming out of their pocket, usually they spend less, they're more aware. So as early as they are able to understand money. So I have a nephew who's 7 and I have a niece that's 7, they're twins. My nephew is very, like, he doesn't like to spend his money. right? And so he'll say, oh, can you get me that? But if he has to spend it, he won't get it. Does that make sense? So if you're, so one thing I like to do with parents is if they're already spending money on their kids, give that to the kids as an allowance, but then make the kid pay for the things. And then what's ever left over, maybe they get to keep, and then they can invest it. They can do buy something, you know, whatever they want to do with that, but it allows the kids to start having the responsibility of having to pay for things.
Yeah. It's not payment for being part of the family. It's an education that they don't get in school. So this is your money education. It starts at this age in our family, and this is what you get for it. And you can set the boundaries. You can actually create the outline of here's how it's going to work. And I love that idea. So they have their own date with money, their own understanding of it.
Yeah. And the other thing I love, so now let's say your kids are older. Right now, if once your kids are 16, you can add them to a credit card. So as an authorized signer and user to your credit card, and then they can have a credit card. So I did that with both of my kids when they were 16. And then they're learning how to credit card responsibly. So my role with my kids was you have this credit card, and if it's something that you need, like you're out, my daughter was in musical theater, so she was always out. So you needed to get food, here, get your food. I cover that, right? But if it's something that you wanted, like my son always wanted to buy stuff on gaming stuff, well, then every Friday you'd have to pay me for that, right? Uh-huh. So that was our role. And it's taught my kids even how to use credit cards from a very early age. Right. And then as they grow, then you kind of let go of the reins so that they feel good and responsible that now that they understand how credit card works, they understand how to pay bills, they understand the responsibility of money. But if we just let them go off and never teach them that, then that's where the dangers can come into play.
You see kids getting out of high school, out of college, and they have these ginormous credit card bills, and it wasn't all being used for school. It was used for a lot of other things. Can you set a limit on that? Just out of curiosity, can you say they can spend up to $100 or some sort of a limit so they don't have an endless supply of credit card opportunity?
Yeah. So it depends on the credit card carrier. Like I know at Amex, you can do that, but other carriers, maybe not, but you can limit. Like I have, you know, all kids are different, right? So my daughter has a different limit than my son, and just helping them with different things like that. So you do have to kind of watch that, because sometimes credit cards will just automatically increase your limit. But you can in the beginning limit that just by saying, hey, no, I only want this much on the credit card, or Amex allows you to limit each card differently.
Each card. Yeah. I do remember that, because I had employees on a business card, and they, you know, those that were traveling for travel expenses, they could put it on the company card instead, but everybody had a limit for, you know, and no alcohol.
Yeah. And I wanted to say one more thing, because this goes back to the kids and just you and your partner, right? So the biggest thing that I see when I'm working with, whether it's couples or families, is the judgment that comes into money that was spent, right? So instead of judging, so when we're having our money date night, I try to say, hey, we can't go back and change whatever we already did, right? But instead of being judgmental, just be curious. Like asking questions like, well, was that purchase in line with your goals or values? You know, was that a need or a want? And so you're not being judgy. You're just asking questions so that the other person can discover what's there for them. Right. Yeah. And that's really important, not just with your kids, but also with your spouses, because then what might happen is they might start hiding stuff, or they might not want to, they just feel ashamed of whatever it is that they're spending money on. Right. But once you can come into this space of in a non-judgmental way and just, hey, I'm here for you. It was already spent. We can't go back and change it. We can't, you know, get mad at it or anything. We could just move forward. So that's the big thing that I say, don't be judgy.
Yeah. You jumped over my question. It was, are there any common money mistakes, you know, maybe a couple that you would like to share with the audience? And I think that's number one, is don't be judgmental of how spending happened, and don't hide it. Like, there is no shame. We're a team. We're in this together. Let's have a conversation, and I will keep it zipped, you know, keep it zipped. I won't judge. Hopefully both parties can agree to that when they step into that. So number one is no judgment where other spending is, but let's have a conversation about it. What are other common money mistakes that we can share with the audience?
Money mistakes. So if we look at, well, obviously, you know, judging and talking about it, I think the mistake of not talking about it. One mistake is people just like put their head in the sand, like, especially if one spouse does all the money stuff and the other one doesn't, like, oh, my partner does that. Well, I think that's the biggest mistake. You both should know what's going on because you never know when something might happen, or even if something doesn't happen, you can both be aware what's happening, what's going on. A lot of times I'll see if one partner is really on point with the money and the other one is not. Well, when I'm in a meeting, because I make my couples come together to the meeting, then the one is just sitting there like, oh, I'm like, I need you to understand what's happening so that you can have a voice. And then that way the other person doesn't get angry or frustrated because they were able to be part of the conversation. So don't put your head in the sand. Be aware. Look at your money. That's the other thing. Like, go through and check your statements. This is the thing. I see it more actually in people that have a little bit more discretionary income. They're not checking their statements. And so they're not seeing that something was charged twice or something that they're paying for, and it just keeps going and going, and they're not even using it. Well, you know, so that's where a lot of wasteful spending comes, by not checking. So that's really what I would say.
Yeah. Non-judgment, have communication, don't bury your head in the sand, and both parties need to show up. And it's not a comp. I think the other thing that I would add to this, it's not a competition. If you make more or I make more, it's the pool. We're talking about the pool of the money and how we're allocating that pool of the money to his, hers, 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 whatever, you know, the two adults in the relationship, and then the children in the relationship, and then the household in the relationship for the family. Like, there's these buckets and there's no judgment. The money comes into the pool. Everybody contributes. Even if, you know, people always say, well, she's a stay-at-home mom. She didn't work. And it's like, are you kidding me? I never had kids, but I have babysit, and I know how dang hard that is, and having to take care of the clothes and the grocery shopping and do all. Oftentimes the wife is the CEO of the house and takes care of the bills and managing a budget for the house. Some of those women who were moms, stay-at-home moms, are more educated than a lot of the business people that I work with, because they know how to do money management and how to get it all done with what they have in a kind, loving, open-hearted way. There are many, many, many women who do this. So this, you know, being in a relationship and being part of a family, it all contributes. There is no one person that's job isn't needed more or is needed more than the other one. And it's not a competition. We're in this together. And I think that that's a really important, important distinction. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And so whatever, if you're in a partnership where you're both working, again, you guys could be making different amounts of money, and then like figuring out how you guys are contributing to the family. If you're in a relationship where one person is staying home, then having that communication, I feel like there's a lot of, that's where a lot of judgment might come into play. Oh, well, my partner's the one bringing the money, so I can't. You know, or, you know, vice versa. Oh, all you do is stay at home all day. Like, there's a lot to that, right? And that's where coming into understanding your mindset around money and the energy around money really comes in to help the couple better understand their relationship. And then when you're dating your money, you're like, you're talking to it. You're like in love with money. You're from a nice, healthy way. So for me, the top three reasons people get divorced: one is lack of communication, two is infidelity, and three is financial stress. And in my program, I'm really helping with the financial stress and helping couples create healthy communication around money, which really helps with the number one reason that people get divorced. Because if you could talk about money, you could talk about anything. Right. I haven't figured out how to solve infidelity yet, but the number one,
if you're communicating, right? I mean, it does. Yeah. It really does actually solve that one as well, because a lot of times infidelity is you're starting to talk to somebody else. You're having conversations with somebody else and not with your spouse. You know, it doesn't just say, oh, we're going to, you know, jump in bed together. That's not where it starts. That's not where infidelity starts. Infidelity starts when you break down communication within the relationship. So what you're talking about really is addressing all three of those issues. And I know you've created a course for folks. So share a little bit about how folks can find you, and we will wrap this podcast up and give people a place to actually get some services, get some help, have some conversations if they need that guidance. Where do they find you, Chris?
Yeah, so you can find me on my website. It's moneycoachchris.com, and everything's on there. So I have the do-it-yourself completely digital course. And then I have some options if you want some just group one-on-one time with me. And then I have the option where if you and your partner really want just a couple one-on-one sessions with me included in the course, that option's available as well. And I make it fun. I'm not a boring money person. I try to make money super fun, super relatable, and the course is set up that way too. So the online digital course, I have videos explaining everything, and I'm a super cool person. So if anybody has any questions, just reach out to me.
She's not kidding you. She does make it fun. She works with kids. It has to be entertaining and engaging and fun. So that's why this lady talks my language. And I am so excited to be able to support her in her mission, because it's in alignment with mine. And that is that every woman needs to have her own money. You need to find a way to have your own money, because things happen. I found myself in my 50s, 52 years old, starting over without my own money. So if there's a way for us to support you on this, that's our mission. Get in touch with either one of us, and we will make sure that we have a conversation with you to find where do you need to be going? What direction do you need to be headed in? And we'll get you the resources that you need to put that all together. Chris, thanks so much for your time today. This was just so valuable, and I love your perspective on things and how open you are about this conversation with folks.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Hey, if you need any help expanding your brand online, I do love to work with entrepreneurs and make sure that you get seen and heard online. So go over to lisamosby.com and book 30 minutes with me, and we'll have a conversation about you and your business. And then for the rest of you, come on back next week. We have more stuff where this came from. And I can't wait for you to meet next week's guests. We have some extraordinary guests in the next 3 months. And every week it's getting more and more exciting. So please come on back.
Thanks for joining me on A Bit of Insight. To get more involved with our wellness community, grab a copy of my book, Live Well, Travel Far, or to explore our travel offerings, visit the website at insightcenterforwellness.com. And if today's episode gave you something to think about, leave a review and please share it with a friend. This is Lisa Mosby reminding you to live well, travel far, and always follow your insight.